All right. Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. Again, I apologize for being gone last week, but it's a long story, so I won't explain it. But we are continuing in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and we are at kind of the juncture between verse 6 and 7. And I think we sort of did verse 6 last time, so I'll just give a bit of a translation. For if I wish to boast, I will not be a fool, Paul says, for I will speak truth. And then the de, but I am sparing. Phaedomai means to spare. So I am sparing, presumably you. And then we have a me clause with a subjunctive, logisetai, which expresses a negative purpose. But I am sparing you, lest someone reckon toward me above what he sees me or hears something from me. Okay, so grammatically, that's pretty straightforward. You know, you might want to spend some time clarifying exactly what Paul means when he says what you see me or conceivably see with respect to me or hear something from me. The interesting problem is the next phrase that begins in our text, at least verse 7, and then it's in the dative, as you can see, and the abundance or greatness of revelations. Now, it's interesting, some English translations, at least, maybe most of them, actually take that little chi phrase there as part of what follows. But that's almost impossible if you read dia, therefore. And you can see that maybe this is a sign of how difficult the syntax is, because if you look at the text critical apparatus, you can see that, Papyrus 46 in D and C in minuscule 1881, and then the Gothic M, the vast majority of manuscripts actually omit dia. That's that little circle omission marker. So, you know, if you omit it, then you can begin a new sentence easily enough. But if you read dia, then in order to have this chi phrase go with what follows, it would have to be an extreme form of prolepsis. That is, I mean, that's the fancy name for when you yank something out of the clause and put it in front, okay? Now, you can make it work to have this chi phrase go with what precedes, and I think it could happen something like this. But I am sparing, and then Paul gives the purpose, the negative purpose, lest someone think other than what you see in me. And then this would be an additional modifier for phaedomai. So it would be translated, you'd almost repeat the thought, and I am sparing chi also, and then take it as a dative of cause, because of the abundance or the greatness of the revelations. And see, that's how the Nestle Alan has punctuated it. They put a period, and so they want us to do something like that. Again, the meaning is not greatly changed, but it was interesting to me. I confess again that 2 Corinthians is not the most familiar territory for me. So as I'm translating along, I'm thinking, wait, the translations do that differently, you know? So that would be one way to work with it and to keep the punctuation that we do have in the critical edition. So maybe we'll just do that. So phrase in verse 7 then gives a further cause why Paul is sparing them. He's not going to go on with describing how he was caught up to the third heaven and all that kind of thing. So does that make sense? Does that make tolerable sense? I mean, it's a little awkward, but at least it's always encouraging when you find something awkward and then you look at the, oh, there's a variant reading. Other people found this awkward too, you know, so that's good. All right, well, we'll just pick up then a little bit then into verse 7. So again, just reading it, dia hina me hipper ai romai, edathe moi skolops te sarke, angelos satana, hina me kalafidze, hina me hipper ai romai. So dia is inferential, therefore, and the hina clauses express purpose, probably, in order that I might not hipper iro in the middle, and it, the lexicon gives here exalt myself or exalt oneself. And that makes good sense here. In order that I might not exalt myself, now the subject of edathe is scallops, which means a thorn or a splinter. And, you know, I think thorn in the flesh is the traditional, but I rather like splinter, because you know how completely painful and distracting a good-sized splinter can be. I mean, you just can't ignore it, right? So a splinter was given to me. Now, let's see, te sarke could be adverbial, was given in the flesh, or I suppose it could be adjectival, a splinter with respect to the flesh was given to me. Doesn't matter too much, probably. And adathe is just the aorist passive indicative from dido me. And now in apposition to skolops, which is nominative as the subject, in apposition we have angelos, messenger, and then satana is the name Satan, of course, which, as I recall, doesn't completely decline. So this must be a genitive form. Let's see. If we look down at the variant reading, you actually get Satan. So we'll take it as a genitive. A messenger of Satan. By the way, it doesn't happen. Usually an angelos in the New Testament is just that, is an angel. But occasionally it means messenger, right? And that's as here. So exactly. And now Paul repeats at the end of verse 7 a double hina construction, which again probably expresses purpose. That it's interesting. God is the one who does the giving, right? And so a splinter was given me with respect to the flesh, a messenger of Satan, in order that it, that is the messenger or the thorn, might slap me. Kalafidzo means to sort of cuff, you know, hit upside the head with your fist. In order that, once again, hipper iro in the middle, in order that I might not exalt myself. So again, this is probably about the most well-known passage in this stretch of 2 Corinthians, and with good reason theologically and sort of existentially.
I like your splinter.
Yeah, again, a splinter is a very painful, very annoying thing.
I like that because a splinter is a little bitty thing.
Yes, yes.
And it only hurts when you hit it.
Yeah, but it really hurts then.
It really hurts.
Yeah.
It don't hurt, but when you touch it, it really
right.
hurts.
Right, exactly.
And you pull it out, it doesn't.
And of course, no one quite knows what this was.
Is it striking to the face? You say it's related to the face?
It doesn't have to be. I think it just means to cuff. But people have thought it was Paul's eyes, you know, when he was blinded, you know, on the road to Damascus, and that may be right. By the way, this is probably a good example of how sarks in Paul can just not have a theological meaning, but probably just here refers to the body, physical flesh, you know, some sort of ailment. And see, this is, we're about to get this strength and weakness, and this is the way of Christ. I mean, it's a shockingly offensive idea that God would choose to work through weakness, both in His Son and in those who follow His Son. But go figure, which is a way of saying Amen, I think. So go figure. So, but again, syntactically, not too hard. Questions on anything in verse 7? Okay, all right. We'll get verse 8. And maybe we'll take 9 as well, because that's pretty straightforward sledding. Hipertutu tris ton kirion parakalisa hina apaste ap emu. Kai ere kenmoi arke soi hekaris mu. Hegar dinamis en asthene teletai. So, literally on behalf of this, now this reminds me, hiper and peri plus the genitive are sort of interchangeable in this time period. And hiper plus the genitive sort of strictly means on behalf of, in the sense of to help out, like Christ died on behalf of us, you know. But it's hard to have that make sense here, on behalf of this thorn, to help out the thorn, right? So it occurred to me that this might be an example of how the meaning of hiper plus the genitive is diminished a little bit to the equivalent of peri plus the genitive, just concerning, right? And I think that's the way it's usually translated, just about or concerning here in 2 Corinthians 12:8. So concerning this, tris, 3 times, I parakaleod, I besought the Lord, that it might go away from me. Now, I checked this out just to make sure. Apaste, of course, is from aphisteme. And you might remember, or normal people don't, that histeme has 2/3 principal parts. Isn't that great? And the weak aorist is transitive in the active, and the strong aorist is intransitive in the active. Why do I know these things? Answer, because in many areas of life, I'm completely useless. That's why. This is actually the strong aorist, subjunctive, active, 3rd singular. It goes sto, stace, stay, like that. And so that means the subject is not, in other words, you don't translate in order that he, the Lord, might take it or withdraw it from me, but in order that it, the thorn, the messenger, might withdraw intransitively from me, right? So all of that was to figure out what's the subject, what's the conceptual subject of apaste. And again, has an intransitive sense. By the way, who can remember this stuff? Answer, somebody who teaches Greek for a living. But if you want to look it up, I Dr. Vels's Not So Fundamental Greek Grammar, chapter 35, actually has a very nice summary of the meanings of histeme, because there's lots of uses. I mean, histeme and its compounds occur everywhere in the New Testament. And so you actually have a nice drawing together of how the meaning changes, whether it's strong aorist or weak aorist and active or middle or whatever. So, and then verse 9, and or maybe here, but, ere ken, this is from Lego, the perfect of Lego, right? He has said to me, now the verb is arkeo, which means to be sufficient, and the subject is grace. So, for he has said to me, my grace is sufficient in relation to you or for you. Why would that be? For power, teletai, is teleod, is brought to completion or is reaches its goal, is brought to its goal in connection with weakness. this is the way of Christ. This is the way he does it, right? Nice short clauses and a little bit of vocab, and there you have it. So, comments on 8 and 9 as to why there are 2/3 principal parts of histeme, I have no idea. It's just Greek is a thinking person's language. Right? Okay? All right, very good. We'll continue on into we'll finish off verse 9, I guess. Hedestaun malan kaukesamai en tais asthenais mu. Hina episke noze ep eme he dinamas tu Christu. Now, hedesta, I had to look up. It's from the adjective hedus, which means glad. And in the New Testament, what you see more often is the adverb heideos, gladly. This is, oddly enough, a superlative form. So most gladly, something like that. Therefore, most gladly, and malon means especially or rather, kaukesamai, I will boast in the weaknesses of me, my weaknesses. Purpose, in order that. Isn't that interesting? Paul says, I'm doing it, I'm learning to boast in my weaknesses, and I have a purpose in mind. In order that, the power of Christ may episkenao, come to rest upon and dwell, epeme, upon me. Let's see. How often do we learn this lesson? Way more often than we volunteer for it, if I could say it that way. But all Christians have, to a greater or lesser extent, come up against this truth. So,
is he talking about confession here in a way?
About like confessing his sins and so forth? No, I think it could probably include that, but I think it's more seeing himself as unable and inadequate for the task. You know, something needs to happen. God puts Paul in that situation to make it happen, and guess what? He doesn't have what it takes. So I think it includes sort of a theological moral. But I just think that when we are forced into reckoning with our own inadequacy, then God can do things with us that he couldn't do otherwise, if you know what I'm saying.
It opens us, and
it sort of tears us open. As you know, it can be very painful, and many Christians could say a lot more about that than I could. So, yeah, it's a really striking truth. To be honest, maybe this is uncharitable, but I found myself wondering how often Joel Osteen preaches on this text. So, if I could say it that way. And maybe he does. Yeah. And then the answer is, well, you know, soli Deo Gloria, to God be the glory. Only. Utterly. I mean, we all believe this, but man. So, but the good news is that it's pretty easy grammatically, so we're happy about that at Greek Club, right? Okay. Good. Other cleanup on verse 9? Okay. All right. Verse 10. Dia eodoko en asthenais en hubrisen en anankais en diogmois. Excuse me, diogmois kai senokoriais hyper Christou, hatan gar asteno, tata dinatas eme. Again, dia, therefore, I am well pleased in weaknesses, in insults, in voters' meetings, in necessities or difficulties, in persecutions, in distresses, all roughly, you know, they're all basically from the same general semantic field in a way, I suppose. On behalf of Christ, I am well pleased on behalf of Christ in all these things. Why? For. Hatan, of course, is just our friend hate, when, plus on. So it's kind of like a conditional sentence. And so asteno would be parsed as subjunctive. For whenever I am weak, then ego understood, I am dinatas, I am strong. So, again, a completely, both in the ancient world and in our day, I mean, the ancient world glorifies reason and wisdom and power and sophistication, especially the Corinthians. Remember the context, athletic competition, wealth, status, these are the cultural values of ancient Corinth, right? Not unlike, I suppose, many societies and certainly ours today. So, good. Questions? Okay. Good. Let's go a little bit farther. Verse 11. Gegana Afron. Humeis me anankasita. Anankasita. Egogar ophelon hip humon sin istas thai. Udengar hystere sa ton hipper lit on apostolon, ekai udeneme. I was trying to be sarcastic there, and it gets worse, or better. Gegana is just the perfect of ginomai, and you might remember that like the eme, it takes a predicate nominative. So that's why afron, which is a third declension adjective, is nominative. So I have become foolish. Or perhaps I have become a fool. And then he says, you, emphatic, anankadzo means to compel or to force. Like in Galatians, not even Titus was forced to be circumcised. Right? So I have become a fool, but you forced me. See, it's your fault. Why? For I, ego, ophelon is from ophelo, and when you follow it with an infinitive, it means I ought. See, here, so, for I ought to be presented or commended, hif humon, by you, right? And why would that be? For uden, nothing, taking it here as adverbial, in no way, I fell short from hystereo. For in no way I fell short of the super duper apostles, even if I am nothing. I mean, it's the apostolic sarcasm is about to ratchet up here. And coming, really, it's very strong in verse 13 especially. So, But let's see, grammatically, again, not too hard. You have to look up some vocab, adverbs here and there, comments, questions about verse 11. Okay, well, we'll end on a note of apostolic sarcasm, and we'll pick it up next week at verse 12. So, all right.